Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all, presumably still y'all. Everybody's welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Had to wait till it got a little cooler out here. Do this. I tried to do it a little earlier. Some of you may have watched. It'll be yesterday for y'all. But I signed my book deal yesterday live on Facebook. Signed my publishing contract. So the Wrecking Yard book's a real thing. It's real, real. There's paperwork behind it and a lot of work in it already. And we're well on our way to doing this thing. And it feels absolutely incredible. I go back and forth on this. I recognize that a lot of times in my life, people have underestimated me because of the way I talk and the way I sound and what have you. But sometimes that's better. I hate to say it, but sometimes it's better when people just constantly misunderestimate you, especially when you can't pronounce misunderestimate. Or under, it's not misunderestimate. I'm saying the wrong. I'm saying the whole word stupid. I'm an author. Look at that. But sometimes it's better. You know, people underestimate you right off the bat. Then they don't see you coming. I mean, hell, I didn't see this coming. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I think some of you have been following along. I've been having some intestinal distress the last about 2 weeks now. But I figured out what the culprit is. Eating too many foods with too much sulfite in them. And I'm having sulfite build up. And I couldn't understand it. I thought I was having a problem with eggs. Because every time I burped, I was tasting eggs. But I guess that's the sulfur. Anyways, we got to the bottom of it, and I have found some relief. Luckily, one of the easiest things you can do is drink a lot of water and start avoiding some of those foods for a while, breaking them up, which is what we've done. But I was doing like orange juice in the morning with a banana, and those are like two of the worst ones. So I had to break all that up a little bit. I think I'm going to cut the orange juice for a little while. Excited to do this episode today. I've never talked about this car. We don't have any sponsors this week. Our sponsorships are very short. We allow people. I didn't want it to be a thing where me and somebody was locked together for 6 months or something like that. I wanted sponsors to be able to come and go because a lot of my sponsors are small businesses. They don't have huge advertising budgets. But if I can do something good for them with a little less money, and we can do it a month at a time or a month here and there when they've got the extra money to do it, it feels better to me. I used to have a small business, and I had to spend money on advertising. I had to be very judicious about how I did it. And I am very thankful to every one of the sponsors I've had on the show since the beginning of the show. But also like to send a special shout out to a man that y'all don't know, but his name is Adam Alcergene. I hope I'm not butchering his name. Adam Alcergene. I think I should thank his wife. Because his wife discovered truck astrology and turned him onto it. And he really got a kick out of truck astrology. And then during the beginning season of the podcast, he was having to do a lot of long road trips with his family and new infants, and everybody was asleep in the car, and he wanted something to listen to. He started listening to my podcast. Well, Adam just happens to be this hotshot literary cat who works for a publishing house as an editor. He's a developmental editor. And Adam saw in the first season of The Wrecking Yard, he saw a book. And he reached out to us, and, him and my manager went back and forth, and him and her lined it all out, what that looked like. And I just recently got to meet him just a month or so ago, but I really like the guy. He's a good old boy, just a really smart, good old boy. And those are my favorite types, really the ones you don't see coming. The ones you don't see coming. The dude's really sharp, and he had this beautiful vision, and now it's an actual thing. We're doing it. He's going to be the editor of my book, and this little publishing house. I've met the founder now, and I really like his name's Andrew Gifford, and he's a really sharp guy. We come from very different environments, but instantly liked the guy, and I feel really comfortable. And we've, the lawyers have looked at everything. Everybody's happy, and I just, if it hadn't been for Adam tuning into the podcast and seeing something there that was even more than what I was already doing, none of this would be happening. So I just couldn't be more happy about that. Far as sponsorship goes, you can, if you want to be a sponsor of the Wrecking Yard podcast, we have all kind of packages. We have very inexpensive packages to expensive pack. We have all different kinds. Please reach out. Don't hesitate to reach out to us at jwlcomedy@gmail.com, or if you have anything to say to the Wrecking Yard. We always welcome feedback and stuff. I don't get to all of it or get to reply to all of it because I get some of it secondhand, but I always enjoy it when I do get the chance to sit down and read it. But we're getting ready to kick off the Diamond Jim Summer Tour, which is exciting. We are literally adding dates every week. And right now we're going to Colorado two different times, and we're doing some stuff in East Texas. We're doing some stuff in Mississippi, Macomb, Mississippi, where we're adding stuff left and right. We got the big shows at the Punchline here in Houston. It's going to be two of the biggest shows of my career ever. We'll be performing, headlining the Punchline for two shows here in Houston, Texas, here in basically what is home base for me. I hesitate to call Houston my hometown, but I guess it is now after this long. I guess I'm a Houston boy these days. I have certainly spent the bulk of my life here at this point. With the Diamond Jim Tour, we have all kind of opportunities there. So if you know somebody that's interested in what I do, that wants some sponsorship opportunities, please reach out to us. We're doing all kind of sponsorship for the Colorado shows. We're doing local. We have they have put a packet, a sponsorship package together that's unbelievable. Going there's some very big number ends of the packages where we're trying to get sponsored by a really decent sized company that has a little advertising budget and wants to spread their name to a demographic. But we have also some small packages and stuff for the local shows. We're doing a lot of different stuff. So if that's something that, you're looking to do something like that, especially in any of those towns we're going to, Gladewater, Pagosa Springs, Colorado Springs, Fort Collins, Houston, Texas, Macomb, Mississippi. If any of these places are places, where you could benefit from doing a little advertising stuff, please don't hesitate to reach out. Sorry, I gotta make sure I get this done real quick. But that's what we got available. Oh my Lord, I'm fighting the mosquitoes out here tonight. They have been nothing less than ferocious. I have been on a 3-day hunt digging through this garage now. We had termites swarming all during last week, and the termites were swarming out here so bad one night. And I was trying to figure out how to beat them. I attacked them a lot of different ways. At one point, I had a blowtorch going, and that was ineffective and very dangerous. And then I hooked up my shop vac and was literally chasing them around with a shop vac, sucking them up with a shop vac. Somewhere in the process of that, one of them tried to climb my ear. I slapped my ear a little harder than I meant to and knocked my hearing aid off somewhere in this garage. So my right hearing aid is at large. I've located as close as I could with a little locator service, but the battery's now dead, so that's not working anymore. And you guys can't tell because you don't get to see the rest of the garage, but it's very dirty. It's very, I have a whole ass mess out here. The wrecking yard is very unkempt. I'm very much like my Papaw Clark in the way that I store and hoard things. And I got a bunch of things out here I don't need. I need to get rid of, but I haven't. And I've been leaving the doors open because we had kittens in here and I want mama cat to be able to come in and get out. But that's also brought in a lot of leaves and trash. And so I've been digging through everything looking for this freaking hearing aid. Still can't find it. So I may have to just file it on insurance and call it a loss. We'll see. But I'm really happy I got insurance on them when I got them because I knew me well enough to know that at some point I would screw this up. All righty. Want to talk about this car? This car was a short little thrill for me. I always tell you guys, don't buy a car at night. This is another time I bought a car at night. And whoo doggy. Had it not just been for luck, I would have gotten screwed so bad on this car, it wouldn't have been funny. But I didn't. I come out a winner on this car on accident. It's not one that I brag about. It was just purely luck. But the car was 1986. I thought Monte Carlo SS. It was certainly painted up to look like a Monte Carlo SS. I don't know if you remember them cars. They were beautiful cars to me. I'm not a big 80s car guy, but those mid-80s G bodies, that fourth generation of G body cars, I really like all I like. You know, when it was A body still and everything, I like those cars. I love the Buick version. You know, of course, the Grand Nationals was such an incredible car and beautiful car. But the Monte Carlo, we'll just get into how the Monte Carlo came about. Monte Carlo. I might have to go back to the beginning. I wrote a lot of notes here. Once upon a time, not really once upon a time, specifically 1968, General Motors was feeling spicy, buddy. After years of standardization and symmetry, they had decided that it's time to spice up that A-body lineup with something new. They want to do a split wheelbase system. What does that mean? Well, basically, GM looked at all their cars and that A-body platform and said, why should all of you be the same size when you could be different sizes for no clear reason? So they divvied it up like this. Two-door models would get 112-inch wheelbase, just kind of short and sporty. Like a true coupe. And four-door sedans got stretched to 116 inches. A little roomy, kind of respectable. You need your four-door be a little bigger than your two-door? Why not? Station wagons, for whatever reason, I guess cargo space, they hauling groceries and kids take some serious real estate. So station wagons. They stretched them out to 121 inches. It was a bold move. Confusing? Little. Stylish? Not yet. They were working on it. Then in 1969, Pontiac dropped the Pontiac Grand Prix. It was a two-door coupe. A two-door coupe, blah, I cannot talk tonight. With a layout so radical, it looked like it had been designed during a fever dream involving a yacht and a muscle car. They took the standard A body and said, let's just stretch the front half and leave the rest of it alone. And what they created was a 210-inch long land boat with a hood that I think you could put a queen size bed in. And now, originally, they referred to this as the A-body special. It was only Pontiac. And then GM was being weird about it, and they were also going to do the front-wheel drive A-bodies And they said, well, let's give it its own category. And they called it the G-Body. Why G? Is it for grand? I don't know. I couldn't find out. I tried to. Is it possibly, maybe it's for gigantic. I don't know. Or maybe just someone in the meeting just shouted the next letter in the alphabet and no one objected. I don't know, even though G is not really the next letter. But maybe somebody just said, Hail G. And everybody was like, cool, works for me. Maybe they're just OGs. I don't know. Of course, Chevrolet is looking over at Pontiac and these grand, the damn Grand Prix are selling. People want them. Chevrolet gets a little jealous. Said, we want one too. So at the time, the general manager of Chevrolet was a man named Pete Estes. And David Hollis was the styling chief. They put together their heads. They hatched a little plan. They're going to take the Grand Prix concept and inject it with some Chevrolet DNA. Throw in a little bit of Cadillac Eldorado flair, and boom, the Monte Carlo came alive. Internally, the car was originally codenamed Concours because all new Chevy had to start with the letter C, which makes the G thing so much weirder. Corporate tradition's real, folks. There were even grand ideas of a coupe sedan and convertible trio. But only the flashy two-door made it to production. And the only reason for that is because it had the best angles and it looked great under dealership lighting. It's a good-looking car. Design-wise, the Monte Carlo borrowed heavily from the Chevelle. Same firewall, windshield, decorated rear window, but got its own flashy outfit. It rocked the new Coke bottle styling, curves in all the right places, and came with hidden windshield wipers and a fiber optic exterior light monitoring system, which sounds futuristic, but mostly it just told you if your lights were broken. This is the 70s. Blinking lights were cutting edge stuff. Of course, our old buddy, John DeLorean, who had just left Pontiac and taken the reins at Chevrolet, rolled out the 1970 Monte Carlo like a dad showing off his barbecue grill. Wasn't just a car, it was a personal luxury coupe with a V8 heartbeat, big old chrome smile. Them early 70s Monte Carlos are beautiful to me. I love them. And for your money, you got yourself a sleek two-door hardtop with big luxury vibes, muscle car options, and enough style to make your neighbors jealous. The hood was long, the stance was wide, the attitude was confident. It didn't just show up at the party, it parked on the lawn like it owned the freaking place. I guess the Monte Carlo is born not out of necessity, but just sheer automotive bravado and interdivisional envy. Getting on into the 80s, it starts changing shape a little bit. You start seeing it in NASCAR, even though the car didn't do great in its original, its first years of NASCAR, we know that it does better later on. By 1986, Chevy is serving Monte Carlo like a buffet. Four body styles, all with a side of, 80s flair. You had the base sports coupe. Still had the same body it had since 1981. But now they put the aero mirrors on it, which was basically the Corvette side view mirrors, doing cosplay on a budget. Then came, they had the luxury sport, the LS. It had a sleeker front, it had wraparound tail lights, it had glass headlights and replaceable bulbs. And then the Super Sport SS kept most of its old look, but just slapped on the new aero mirrors, like a dad wearing skinny jeans. And then there was also the aero coupe. You had to make 200 cars for it to be a NASCAR. Chevy's secret NASCAR weapon was the Aero Coupe. It was disguised as a production car. It had a sloped rear winder, shorter trunk lid, just a cool speedy spoiler on it. Only 200 made, all white with burgundy interiors, built in Texas, shipped off to Michigan to get the race-ready makeover. It's the unicorn of Monte Carlos, rare, sleek, and built to make left turns at 200 mile per hour. And if you know, one of the patron saints of the wrecking yard is a man, Dale Sr. Dale Sr. won a whole bunch of races in a Monte Carlo. That I think that's part of why I love that car so much. You know, I grew up, I was a big Dale fan growing up. I don't know if you guys have checked out the new documentary Earnhardt on Prime, on Amazon Prime. Ron Howard, Brian Grazer put this thing together, Madden Studios. Also worked heavily with Dale Jr., Dirty Mo Media. And they only released the first two episodes so far. I ain't gonna lie, man. They had me crying in both them episodes. They had me crying about Neil Bonnett like that shit happened yesterday. Like I forgot how great he was. It was amazing. It was amazing. And they're very honest about it. They're very honest about Dale's flaws and everything. It's a fantastic watch. So if you are a fan of NASCAR, if you're a fan of especially that era of NASCAR, even if you're a fan of Darrell Waltrip, you are to watch. Boy, they paint Darrell Waltrip in a better light than I would have if I'd have made the show. But I'm a Dale fan. Anyways, it was pretty fantastic. And that's the story of the Monte Carlo. That's how we got the Monte Carlo. It's not how I got my Monte Carlo. I got my Monte Carlo. It was kind of towards the end of 2001. Maybe just post-summer. I was driving a wrecker at the time. It was right after Tropical Storm Allison had just flooded Houston out like a son of a 50. But I was driving a AAA wrecker that had a snorkel on it, big old Ford with a snorkel on it, big old F-350 with a snorkel on it. I don't remember if that was a wheel lift truck or if that was, I think that might have been my flatbed truck. It might have been my wheel lift. No, I think that's why I had that old Eagle Claw wheel lift on it. I was doing a lot of AAA. I was doing mostly AAA stuff, just roadside service, stuff like that. I wasn't doing any accidents. I wasn't doing repos or towaways anymore. I'd gotten all that system out of my system. I didn't want to do that mess no more. I just want to drive a wrecker. I like towing people, and I like fixing flat tires, and it was something that fit me. It felt natural. I like riding around in my pickup truck all day, listening to country music and helping people. It was a cool job. Also liked doing drugs at the time, and it was one of those jobs you could get away with doing drugs at back then. So I did AAA. I had the 493 key map and one, I think, part of the 492 key map. But then when it came to like roadside service, I worked for Toyota Roadside Service and Ford Motor Company Roadside Service and General Motors Roadside Service Assist. And so we did for those, we would go to Pasadena, we'd go all over Houston. You know, we covered a pretty wide map for that. Me and Victoria were not married at the time. We were just living together. It was me and Tori. We were living in a little apartment, man. Just kind of off in the hood, right off. So the place I worked at was right there at Richmond and Hillcroft, which was like Party Central. But once you got off Richmond, like especially going, south. If you get off Richmond south, just a few streets, you're in the hood, man. Like it's, you know, that's the way party streets always are. It's party street, and then everything around is dangerous as hell. And we lived on a little street called Windswept, right there off Hillcroft. And it was about two streets, one street off Richmond there. Little cheap apartment. I think it was like $500 a month for a little one bedroom loft apartment that we had. We did all right, you know. We didn't have a lot of big money, you know, but we also didn't have a lot of big bills. You know, we were mostly just partying. That was our biggest bill, that and food and rent, you know. But we didn't have a whole lot going on. We were, I was working for this, I worked for this Persian dude, this Persian guy coming, a bunch of the towing companies in Houston. At one point were owned by a bunch of Persian dudes from California. And this Persian dude from California, he only come out there maybe once a month. He'd come out and check out the trucks, look at paperwork, stuff like that. And he had this kind of like trashy lady that ran the dispatch and everything that had false teeth. I just remember because you'd come in, she always had her teeth out. And she'd start talking to me. I was like, what are you doing? But, and she was dating one of the drivers, a guy named George. He was all right sort of dude, Hispanic dude, pretty good dude. We had a variety of characters that worked there. They were, some of them were a real hoot. One of them was a dude named Glenn that had actually worked with me over at the first record company I ever worked for a guy named Cesar. And I had got Glenn a job over here at this AAA thing. I don't think he lasted very long. AAA's kind of, it's a lot of rush, rush, rush. Doing AAA, doing roadside assistance is not like, you know, you can do an accident. And if it's the right accident and you get the right tow, you can make enough money to make your night on that one accident. Or at least a substantial chunk of your night. When you're doing AAA calls in one of the biggest cities in the country, you're getting $6 to $8 a call. So you're running 100 calls a day or trying to, you know. I think average I ran about 50 to 60 calls a day. But that was humping it. That's a 12, 14 hour day humping it. Get you 50 or 60 calls a day. You're getting it. That's everything from lockouts, popping, you know, unlocking people's cars, tire replacement, tow, jump start, whatever it is, you know. I did a lot because that 493 key map, you could do that. See, it was a lot of it was downtown Houston, all the parking garages. And my truck was kind of low, so I could get it in the parking garages. And I could go up in there and it just all day long, you could do jump starts in those parking garages for AAA. Just people with a dead battery go up there and jump them off, left their lights on. And this is back in 2000 before everybody's lights turned themselves on and off. You can make yourself a little money, you know, but you was hustling all day long, and it wasn't exciting. It was kind of boring, you know. It wasn't like chasing wrecks. It wasn't like doing repos or anything like that. But I wasn't looking for exciting at the point. I just, you know, I want to make my little bit of money and have a good time. That's all I wanted to do. I didn't have no big plans. I wasn't going nowhere. I wasn't trying to do nothing. I wasn't trying to buy nothing. I was just having a good time. And when that storm, when Allison hit Houston and flooded Houston out, I ran that record for 3 days straight. And most of the time, honest to God, AAA flat out told us, they said, if anybody needs help getting pulled out of the water, pull them out of the water, we'll reimburse you. Make a ticket, get them to sign it, and we'll pay you for a call, like the $6 call or whatever it was. And they paid for all our fuel. So it was that was an exciting night, but we were getting to help people, man. And we was running around all night, yanking people out of the water, man. I ran up and down. Shepherd had like 4.5 foot of water running down Shepherd Avenue, and it happened so fast, people got stuck in it. There was cars floating up and down Shepherd, and I could get that wrecker in from the side streets and get out there with my winch, wade through the water, hook them cars up, drag them up into the parking lots. So we were just out there, I remember me and old Glenn and my buddy Billy. I'll tell you more about Billy in a little bit. But we were out there. Mr. Square was out there. He worked with us. We was just out there wading through the water, winch cables, ratcheting up under these cars in the water and grab one of them safety hooks or whatever we could find to latch onto. It wouldn't tear up the car, and just yanking these cars up in the parking lot. And we knew AAA was going to pay us, so we were just writing ticket, having people sign for the car, because we were going to come once the water came down and take all the cars to the impound lot. They were all flooded, fried. But the people were so grateful, and we were doing very well. People weren't even AAA members. It didn't matter. If you were stuck in the water, we was pulling you out. We was just trying to do whatever we could. And cops were out there. Everybody was out there doing all kinds of stuff. Fire department was out there rescuing people. This is long before the days of the Cajun Navy. But there was all kind of folks out there. Bass boats and all kind of stuff. Going up and down the freeway trying to help people, rescue people. City really come together. It's this one thing I say about Houston, man. Houston strong, buddy. We come together when these things happen. And generally, a lot of people, there's always bad apples and bad characters that's what the news is going to focus on. Oh, there's people threatening linemen. And it happened like 3 times. But nothing about the hundreds of thousands of people who are out there giving linemen food and doing all that, because that don't make good TV. But my city comes together. We come together when stuff happens, man. And Allison was it's no different than any other time we'd done that. But what happens is we was pulling these people out of the water and stuff. A lot of this is kind of the nicer part of town. It's off Richmond and, Shepherd, and you're kind of getting close to River Oaks and all that. And a lot of these people we were pulling out of the water, they just get out of the car and hand you a $100 bill. They just wanted to thank you for helping them, And granted, we were out there wading around some nasty water, We're lucky we didn't all get the cancer or something from it. It was some gross water, and there were snakes and rats, and wasn't the safest thing, but it was fun and it was exciting. We were having a good time. We felt like we were doing something. You want to be a part of that stuff. Well, I wanted to be a part of it, and it was fun. But as a result of that night, I had me about $6,500 sitting in my pocket, cash money. 2 or 3 days worth of working, not including the paycheck I had coming from AAA. So we had a little extra. I mean, you couldn't do anything because the whole city was flooded out, so we were hanging out. But luckily, the drug dealers were still working. You get yourself a little treat for the night and go have a good time at the apartment after you're done working and get cleaned up. We're blowing and going. We're having a good time. That was about the time the Persian dude had a brother, and the brother had killed somebody out in LA in a street fight. Brother was like Iraqi army. Anyways, the dude had attacked him outside a nightclub, and all of a sudden, this dude owned a bunch of nightclubs too. This dude attacked him outside a nightclub. The brother defended himself but killed the piss out of the dude that attacked him. So he sent the brother to Houston to run the record company, and he was cool, man. Me and him got along really well, and I hung out with him and his girlfriend a couple times and broke bread with him and stuff. They were pretty cool. Tori didn't get him. She wasn't the most progressive person. She was a little backwards when it came to foreigners and didn't always make a good impression. But I had worked with people from all over the world, and I got along really well with these folks. The place is called VIP Towing. Right there off Richmond and Hillcroft. My buddy Billy, I said, Billy. So there's like two things that happen in Houston. And Houston, as you go north up 45, and the further you go north up 45, you get to like rich country folks, and then you get to country folks without no money, and then you get to like some really trashy folks that are a little backwards. And then you get, once you go a little farther out, you start getting into cowboy land. You start getting up there. Everything north of that, those are cowboys, you get to Dallas, and there's a lot of drugstore cowboys in Dallas, but you get up there towards Stephenville and all that, that's all cowboy land. And if you take 59 South out of Houston, then you're headed towards Victoria, Texas, and you're getting down to the Rio Grande Valley, and it gets heavier Latino demographic. Further you go south, you go into Galveston. Galveston's a little hood. Go into Galveston, but there's not much between Houston and Galveston. There's Webster and Clear Lake, a couple of places, but it's a bunch of rich people down there. Bought a bunch of land, made a lot, a bunch of farmland, made it really expensive. But if you go up 59 north, you're going towards East Texas. You're going towards my people. You go I-10 west, you go out towards San Antonio. I-10 east, you're headed to Beaumont and Louisiana. There's more Cajuns per capita the farther you go east from Houston. And then going west, you're going to San Antonio, which is a lot of cowboys and a lot of Mexican folks. I like San Antonio. But you go up 59 north, you're going into East Texas, man. You're going into deep East Texas. You're going behind the Iron Curtain. Not very far out of Houston. Doesn't take long. Get out of Houston, get behind the Pine Curtain. And there's all sorts of people that live in East Texas, but it's more of a melting pot than the rest of Texas, I think. Like when I grew up in East Texas, I don't know if I've said this before, I talk about it a lot, but the hood ain't far from the holler, and poor folks just kind of all live together in East Texas. There's a lot of black and white folks and a lot of blurred lines and a lot of everybody grooving. You still, like I said, you always got your bad characters on both sides of the fence causing problems. But there's a whole lot of people just living together, just blurring the lines between black folks and white folks the further you go up 59 north. And like right when you get outside of Houston, I call them gangster cowboys. That's where you get into like the gangster cowboy area. And that's what Billy's a white boy, but he was a gangster cowboy. Billy was a little hood, Billy was a little holler. Well, he was a cool dude. He had street smarts. You have your back, Billy. One night, we got in a little snafu one night at a convenience store with some local idiots, and Billy jumped right in, had my back in a minute. I'm a big fan of Billy. Old Billy was a good old hand. And Billy and his wife were always kind of on again and off again. When Billy and his wife was off again, me and Billy was hanging out with the same drug dealer, doing the same kind of stuff. When him and his wife was on again, Billy would straighten up and stop acting up. But when him and the lady was off, by God, he was drinking, playing poker, having a good old time. We had this one dude that we always bought our stuff from, and I can't remember his name, saved my life. All I remember is he had one eye. He was a Mexican dude, had one eye. And this dude was just sure I was a cop. We'd tell him all the time we were record drivers, but he was just sure I was a cop. He thought I was a cop. He thought every time I came over there, he got weirded out at some point and said I was a cop. Somebody called me over the radio. My call sign was something something Kilo. And somebody called me Kilo over the radio one day, and I had my radio, my little Nextel radio on in his house, and he freaked. Was that? Was it the cops? Your cop? I knew you were a cop, man. He was an on edge dude. Got called out one night, tow a truck, and it wasn't roadside assistance, it was AAA. But see, the thing with a AAA Plus membership, it wasn't all that expensive back then. But if you had a AAA Plus membership, you could call for somebody else if their car was broke down. And one of the things you got with that is you got free 99-mile tow. It was included that. And we got paid, but boy, we sure never wanted those long tows. Those long tows you lost money on, because even if it's a 40-mile tow, it takes you 3 hours, you might get $12 for that call, with the mileage and everything. So nobody ever wanted to do them long tows. We're always trying to get at them. Let me take you to a shop as close as we can. Let me drop you off over here and change your tire for you, get you back on the road. I don't want to tow you yet. People come, oh, I need you to tow me to Pearland, and midday traffic, that's 2 hours. you're off the clock, you're not working. And then you got to come all the way back to the key map, start getting calls again, unless a roadside service call comes in. We had a fly pestering me over here. I get called out. It's not too long after all the Allison stuff. The city's still kind of screwed up. There's still a bunch of flooded cars and stuff. And I got called out one night from a AAA Plus member. Said, got to pick up a truck in downtown Houston. And that truck is going like almost to South Park, which is like south side of Houston. It's a rough area at the time. So, like I said, it's 2001, probably like July, August 2001. When I get out where this truck's broke down, this truck is a, it's about a 94 extended cab, 3/4 ton Chevrolet. I couldn't tell you what the original color of the truck was. It had so many different color body parts on them. But it was like, instead of like, a lot of times you'll see, I call them calico vehicles, when you see somebody's trying to get a vehicle ready for paint and they're putting new body parts or swapping body parts off other cars and stuff. But it was like they would go to the junkyard and look for the most dented up body part to put on this truck. Because this truck had all these different color body parts off different trucks, but they were all beat to shit. This thing, the doors wouldn't hardly shut. They were sagging. The windows was broke off down in one door. I mean, just the hood was jacked up left and right. Bumpers were just homemade jacked up bumpers. This truck, I don't know how he got it from South Park to downtown Houston. Apparently, he was doing some scrapping. And he had went down there and taken a load of scrap to this place in downtown that did scrap back then. I had the flatbed then, so I get out there and, boy, I tried everything in the world to get that truck start up and go. He said it just died on him while he was driving. I did there. I took the fuel filter out, blew the fuel filter out with compressed air. I did everything I could to get that truck. I did not want to drive. First of all, I didn't want to go to South Park at night. I don't have the right uniform. I'm good in a lot of situations, but that was a time period where white dudes weren't super welcome down there. And I didn't want to go test that theory in the middle of the night. Second of all, I wanted to go home and party. I didn't want to go drive all the way to South Park, fight traffic all the way back, and make just a little bit of bullcrap money on this tow. I'd rather stay in the city for the next 2 hours doing quick jobs. But nothing I did get that truck. That truck would fire up, run for a little bit, and die. I couldn't get it going. Oh, I was pissed. This is a older black dude. He looked like he's probably in his 40s, maybe. His name was Ray Ray. There's a lot of dudes in South Park named Ray Ray. That's what he told me. His name was Ray Ray. It was not the name on the AAA card that I went out there for. That was a woman's name. So I knew the deal. I was like, okay, buddy. I was like, look, I can't get this thing to go. I'm going to tow it for you. Give me the address. So he gives me the address. I find it on the key map where we're going. And I load this 3/4 ton truck on that flatbed truck of mine. And the whole time I'm driving with it, I'm worried parts are falling off of it. Like, I'm not exaggerating. This truck was just, there was literally things held together with wrapped up wire on it. Damn mosquitoes. Hold on. That's out of here. South Houston, man, 2001. This is like the height of the MLK cruise, man. This is when they would, guys would go out there, the car dudes would go out there and cruise MLK to like 4 in the morning, man. And there'd be several thousand cars out there up and down MLK. And, you know, there'd be some fights, there'd be some rough houses, there'd be some problems, man. Plus, the cops kept going down there and trying to break it up. And by halftime, the cops were adding more problems to the situation. It was a little bit of a powder keg. It was a hot area, man. There was a lot happening there. DJ Screw had died in 2000 and nobody was over it yet. Everywhere you went, you heard DJ Screw and South Park Mexicans music. And but down there, they had flooded real bad in Allison too, but that's a part of the city that the city likes to ignore. And they don't go down there and fix anything. So there were still junked out cars everywhere, flooded houses everywhere, houses with caution tape all around them, caved in roofs, tarp roofs. I mean, it was jacked up, dude. It was jacked up. And place, it just looked like a war zone, right after Allison. It was bad. After street lights still weren't working right down there. It was a mess, man. And we go down Cullen, like 7,000 block of Cullen. Like we're out of 610 loop. We're like, no, that's not outside of 610 loop. Is that outside? I can't remember. We're like 7,000 block of Cullen. We're past it's my old favorite butcher shop. It's called Bud's House of Meat. We're past Bud's House of Meat. And this dude takes me, I take him to an address on a little road called Faulkner over there. And when we turn on the Faulkner, them dudes, a lot of them don't like record drivers because repo men and stuff, preyed on them neighborhoods going down there repoing cars left and right. And so there's like dudes sitting on their cars. It's Saturday night. Everybody's sitting on their cars on both sides of the street, eyeballing me. I'm glad I got Ray Ray in the passenger seat for an interpreter if things get out of hand. I'm nervous, uneasy rider. We get the little address, there was a lot of houses built in the 50s back then. Now that most of them are gone, been replaced by new houses. But back then, it was a lot of 50s style little bungalow houses and such. Sure enough, it's one of those houses. He wants me to back up in the driveway, let that truck down the driveway. So I back up in there and we let that truck down. People coming over talking to him and stuff. And I'm just trying not to piss anybody off and unload this old truck. And I get that old raggedy son of 50 unloaded. And this is what pissed me off. Got it unloaded. And he was already telling one of them guys what was wrong with it, what was going on with it. One of these old hands, one of these old heads, walked over there, got the truck, said, "Man, let me see them keys." And so I handed Duke keys. He starts that truck up. That truck sat there, idled, ran just fine. I was so pissed. I done towed this thing all the way out there. And, all right, mosquitoes eat me alive. I looked over in the yard. I seen it when we was pulling in. And right there in the side yard, there was this black 1986 Monte Carlo. And it looked like it had been sitting there a while, but the paint looked good on it. Everything looked pretty straight on it. It was a good-looking car. Had that Intimidator look to it. I was like, hell yeah. So I asked Ray Ray, I said, "Man, whose car is that, man?" Well, Ray Ray finds I'm interested in his car. He starts giving me the lies. "Oh, that's the fastest car on the block, dog. That's the fastest car around, man. That's my cousin's car, man. That's the fastest car around here, man." I was like, "What y'all doing with it? Don't look like you've been driving." He's, "Oh, it got flooded when Allison happened. We ain't done nothing with it yet." I said, "Y'all didn't clean it out or nothing." He said, "Well, we opened the door. We let all the water out. They got water up in the, we had water up to the hood and it's my cousin's car, and he's been doing this and that. He's just feeding me crap." I'm like, "Okay, bro." I was like, "Well, does your cousin want to sell the car?" He said, "Oh, yeah, he'll sell it. He'll sell it, man. I have to go get him. He's got the title." And I was like, "Oh, here we go. About to go on a hood goose chase." I've been on a couple of them buying cars. I said, "Man, I see he's got a clean title for it. He's got a clean title for it." I said, "You got the keys for it? Let me check it out, man." "All right, man, I'll go find my cousin. I'll find out where my cousin's at." All right. So he goes in there and gets on the phone. "Somebody bring me the keys." And of course, the guys from the neighborhood that are hanging around, some of these old heads are telling me, "Oh, that's a fine one right there. Got a 454 in." Well, I never heard of a mid-80s Monte Carlo with a 454 in it. But it wasn't back. You couldn't Google. You couldn't just pick your phone up and go, did Chevrolet ever make a Monte Carlo with a 454 in it? It had little SS stickers on it. I thought, man, this must be some special edition. Most of them had 305. This thing got a 454 in it. Boy, we might be owning something. I get inside the car, start messing around. Battery's dead as hell, so I go get the jump box out of the truck, come out there and hook up the jump box, and boy, all the electric comes on inside, but I just bumped the starter. I feel it had a little juice to it. I was like, all right, it feels like I want to do something. So I get out, pop the hood, man. Sure enough, there's a 454 in there. And it doesn't look, I mean, it just doesn't look like a swap. It doesn't look like a bad swap. Even though I could tell some of the like vacuum stuff wasn't hooked up, and I just thought it was just poor mechanic work, like somebody didn't know what they was doing, got in there messing around with it. I hadn't. Don't buy a car at night, bro. Especially one you're excited about. I got excited. I thought I stumbled onto something. Naive and dumb. I said, boy, I rode in these cars and they had a 305, but I ain't never rode one that had a 454. I bet this bugger gets down. This might be some kind of good deal here, you know. Might be something I can flip, make a little money on. Might be rare. I never heard of one, I can tell you that. I checked the oil, ain't no water in the oil. Oil's dirty, but there ain't no water in it. I crank it over a couple times. It won't start up, but it's trying. I can tell something going on there, but I can't tell if maybe it needs a fuel pump, so it's not getting fuel. It's a lot to try to diagnose in the dark when you got 12 people standing behind you talking to you and stuff and feeding you, you know, various legends of the car. Boy, Ray Ray come out there with the portable phone. Said, man, my cousin wants to talk to you. So I get on the phone with his cousin. Talk to you. He wants $1,000 for the car. I can't get it to start. Battery's bad in it. Can't get it to start. This is 2001. $1,000 for a car that don't run. That's a lot of money. You know what I mean? Like, work with me here, bub. I offered him 500. He got a little hot, and we went back and forth. We ended up on $700. Then I realized I was about to have to pull my wad out into a strange neighborhood, and I just decided to trust the game. I was like, you know what? I don't think Ray Ray's gonna let him rob me. He wants me to buy this car. I'm just gonna take it. And I did. I had a knot in my pocket. I whipped that knot out and I peeled off $700 bills. I said, ask him to bring the title over. Ray said, well, he ain't got no car. I said, well, all right. I said, let's do this. I said, let's go over to his house and pick him up with the title. We'll bring him over here. Everybody trust everybody. And I'll load the car up. And then I'll give him the money when he gives me the title. Ray Ray's cousin, I can't remember what his name is. He's cool with it. He's like, yeah, I'll come. He's just a couple blocks over. We hop in the wrecker, run over there. We pick him up, come back, all of us squeeze together in that cab, let them out at Ray Ray's house. I get out, hook that old Monte Carlo up. I worked it up on that flatbed. It had them ground effects. I had to really carefully, not to damage them ground effects. Work that thing up on that flatbed. Look at that yard, had a little ramp to it. I work that Monte Carlo up on that bed and get it secured. Get out there. Old boy's got the title. He signs the title over to me. I give him $700. Jump back in the truck with my title. Boogie on back to Houston. We had a little lot there at the record company where we parked the car and trucks at night. So I just took the truck back over there and I left that Monte Carlo on it. And I left a note for the dispatcher. I said, when I come in the morning, I'm going to drop this off. I knew a dude named Amir. There's a lot of Persian dudes with mechanic shops all right there in that area, too. Anyways, I knew this dude had Amir. We'd done a bunch of business together. I'd take him a bunch of cars and a bunch of customers. He was a good hand. So I was going to take that Monte Carlo over to beer. I didn't really have a place to work on a car right there. I go over there, man. I tell Tori I bought this car. She's all excited about it. It's a cool looking car, you know. Tell Billy about it that night. We're having some beers and stuff. He's like, "Ah, it's a 454. I never seen." I said, "Me either, bub. I ain't seen one with a 454 either." Like I say, you couldn't just go Google anything then. Back then, you had to rely on the gurus you knew. I get up in the morning before I start my shift. I go over and get the truck. I drop Monte Carlo off of the mirror. Ask him to check it out. Find out if he can get it started. This and that kind of thing. Check everything out. It's had water in it. Smelled like a fish orgy inside. And, you know, need some work. Mirror had some guys who paid a little bit of money. They'd come over and clean cars out, vacuum out, steam them out. He's going to have one of them do it for me, all that kind of stuff. Cool, man. I go off of work all day and get done. Towards the end of the day, and man, I'm gonna run over there with Mir, check out the car. Boy, I'm excited. I'm still psyched about this old Monte Carlo I bought. Get over there and get to Mir's shop. He's like, "Oh, my friend, I got bad news, my friend." I said, "What's bad news?" He said, "Well," he said, "Jerry, they never made a Monte Carlo with a 454. This is a swap." He said, "This is an LS5 454, which came out of like the early set back when they were putting 454s in Monte Carlos. It probably came out of a Monte Carlo or a GMA body car. But I don't think they put the LS5 in the trucks. I think they used a different one for the trucks, but I may be wrong about that. But somebody had swapped." He said, "It's an easy swap. Everybody does it." He said, "These things also come with that Oldsmobile 350, which was really wide, big ass engine. And so it's a pretty easy swap." He says, "That's why it looked right in there. It looked like it belonged in there." But sure enough, they had swapped an early 70s LS5 in there, and that's where the problems, they start running into problems. There was just parts of the wiring harness that they couldn't, because they weren't using all the stuff off the newer engine, that they just unhooked and pulled to the side and duct taped in a ball and stuck off in the fender. I said, "Damn, what's it going to take to fix all that?" He said, "Well, that's not a big deal." He said, "A lot of that stuff we don't need for this engine. They just run carbureted." And he said, "I just need to go through the carburetor." He said, "Fuel system's a little dirty, sitting in the water, and it's got water in the fuel." He said, "We done drained the fuel out of it, and that's not gonna be a big deal. Some fuel filters, I'll go through the carburetor for you. You'd be back on the road. That thing will run." He said, "Engine's solid." He said, "I've been through it, and everything looks good. They done pulled the plugs, checked the pressure, and all that good stuff." He said, "Engine's solid, man." I said, "All right." I said, "Well, what's?" I said, "Man, that don't sound that bad, you know." This is early 2001 shop bill. We're talking 500, 600 bucks right now. You know, we're not talking crazy money, maybe $700. But in my mind, this car looks clean to me, right? I looked at it night before. I run my hand down the paint. The paint looks good. Look like it's been sitting outside for a long time, but it looked like a little rubbing compound, a little elbow grease. This paint looked good again. He said, "Also, this ain't an SS." I said, "Oh, hell. What the hell are you telling me, man?" He said, "These are just SS decals somebody put on it." He said, "This ain't an SS car." And he starts showing me the little differences and stuff, why it's not an SS car. There's a sport coupe. Well, the dollar signs in my eyes got a little lower. I haven't found anything rare. I found somebody's project and tricked myself into buying it, is what has happened. Damn, boy. He said, that's not the worst thing yet." Oh, hell. Takes you back the car, he pops the trunk. And even though the outside of the car looks beautiful and fine, it's very clear that the left rear fender is mashed off into the trunk and all jacked up out of shape. The masterful, I don't know how much chicken lath and Bondo the sculptor used to make that outside fender. But he had put in his work. Oh boy, was a artisan with the Bondo. He had built a fender out of Bondo. That thing was mashed off of that truck. That car was jacked up. I was like, "This car ain't worth shit, Amir." He said, "No, man, this is He said, if you want to fix it, we can fix it. It'd be a fun car to drive around. But he said, it's a cool looking car, you know, but it, he said, ain't nobody gonna buy it. It ain't worth shit. Man. I said, well, I damn sure can't sell it not running. Let's go ahead and get it running, man. Let's get fixed up. And the exhaust was all jacked up. And, you know, I don't think it's the first time it sat in water. The exhaust had holes all in it and everything. Mr. Square worked at the towing company. Mr. Square drove the big flatbed, the big heavy duty truck. And Mr. Square was a black man in the 60s. And he was from South Houston. Mr. Square was. I got back to the shop. He said, well, how's that car, young blood? And I'm telling him all about that car and what I was rolling. He said, man, my people, you can't go down there waving no money, Jerry. They's waiting on you. I said, yeah, they got me, but I said, they seen me coming. They seen me get excited about that Monte Carlo. I went for a ride. I said, I think I took myself on a ride. He said, yeah. He said, man, just do what you can with it. I said, yeah, that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to put a little money into it. Maybe it'll just be my driveline car, you know. Sure enough, old Mirror gets it running for me, man. Just a couple of days. Don't take it long at all, boy. Gets it running. I stopped by the shop. I said, you drive it? He said, yeah, it's fun to drive, man. He said, that thing gets down. 454's got some mass in it. He said, little car. A lot of 454s are turds, but this one's running pretty hot. It'd get down. I said, all right, man. I said, what else? Well, we knew it needed an exhaust system. I wasn't going to be able to get it inspected without no exhaust system. I had this muffler shop at the time over in that area that I dealt with, and this muffler shop was owned by this redneck dude named Tyler. And Tyler was that dude. Was it me and my buddy Will Loden talk about this all the time? I don't trust somebody that just never has an okay day. You know, them people that every day they have is great. I don't trust them. And the same way the person that has every day's worst day of their life. I don't trust them either. If you don't every once in a while just have an okay day, I don't know. I have a hard time believing stories. And Tyler is one of these dudes that every day was a great day for Tyler. And if you listen to Tyler long enough, you got the feeling that after he clocked out of work every day, he went whipped somebody's ass. Because every story Tyler had was about him whooping somebody's ass. And Tyler was probably about 400 pounds if he is a pound and about 5 foot 8. And I wasn't 100% sure that I seen Tyler get out of breath putting air in a tire one time. You know, like I just. It was hard to believe some of these fight stories. I know some of them big boys could fight, but boy, old Tyler's story, he done whooped them all, you know? But Tyler gave me good deals on exhaust. Like I said, we'd done some horse trading here back and forth. I brought him some cars, stuff like that. I take it Monte Carlo, and it's fun to drive. I am not going to lie to you, buddy. I pulled out some mirror shop. There was a little dead end and then a little straightaway going the other way. And I pulled it out and roughed it up down that dead end. I was going to go get some tires put on it too. Some old tires were dry rot. And I back up into that street, boy, and I power brake that thing just a little bit. I mean, it didn't take a start cooking them tires. And I let off that gas. I let off that brake and just put that hammer down. And I'm telling you, that G body was sideways. About halfway down that road, a beard and all his guys out there, like, it sounded horrible. Exhaust had holes all in it. Boy, that thing was boogie, man. You could just come around a curve and just goose it a little bit and get that back in a little squirrely. And I'd driven around a little bit before I took it over to the exhaust shop, and I could tell it's pulling. Like it's misaligned because of that wreck it was in that nobody told me about back here. It definitely, it's got a pull to it. But I pulled that thing up in that garage shop. Boy, Tyler went nuts for it. I said, SS? I was like, no, it's not a real SS. It's the hell it ain't. It looked like an SS to me. It ain't really this. It's got a 454 in it. It's something somebody built. He said, no, man, I heard they made a special edition Monte Carlo with a 454 in it. They're real rare. I was like, they didn't. I found out they didn't. And there's never such thing. I said, this is an old 454. It's out of a old 70s car somebody put in it. No, man, I think you're wrong. Think you're wrong, partner. Think you're wrong. Think that's special edition. I'm not wrong. They never made a special edition with a 454 in the 80s. At least not in 1986. But man, what can you do for me on exhaust? He builds me a little. Basically, just a little Y-pipe duals. Hell yeah. Sound good. Put some of them old cheap turbo mufflers on. Sounded good. That big block just. You got about 50 miles an hour, it rattled your brain, but sounded good to me. I liked it. All right, man. The mirrors guys come over here and clean the inside out. I was pretty good. And I was figuring out some of the electrical problems as they were coming up. I had it a couple weeks, you know. Boy, every time I take a car over there at Tyler's shop, he's asked about that Monte Carlo. Man, what you gonna do with that Monte Carlo? I want it. Got a number three hat on while he's talking to me. What do you want? What do you want for that Monte Carlo? I gotta have it. I said, Tyler, man, I tell you there ain't no special edition. It's just a car somebody swapped a 454 in, man. I said, I don't know what I'm doing. I think I'm gonna hold on to it. I don't think I can get my money back out of it. Well, you decide you wanna sell it, you better let me know. I run around in it a little bit here and there, but man, it pulls bad. Get it cleaned up. Paint looks good on it after I get it cleaned up. Cannot. Now, boy, I've seen Tyler a couple more times. They're trying to see Tyler. What you do with that Monte Carlo? Well, the exhaust started leaking on it. So I took it over there for him to fix the exhaust on it. Man, I think we had a weld crack for the muffler. Got a little ticking sound back there. So they get up on the lift. Boy, Tyler's up under there, welds that thing up and get done. He said, man, he said, I want this car, man. I want to fix it up for my boy. I said, Tyler, this car got problems, man. You can't give me what I got in it right now. I didn't tell him what I had in it. This car's got problems. I can't get the money out of it that's worth all the time I already put into it. I don't want to sell it, man. He said, you wouldn't take 4 grand for it, and threw me for a loop because I thought he was about to offer me a grand for it. And I went, what? He said, you wouldn't take 4 grand. I'll give you 4 grand right now. I can have it over here, but I can get my wife to go by the bank and bring it over here. I'll give you 4 grand for that car right now. You got title? I was like, yeah, I got a clean title. I said, I don't know, man. I don't know if I want to sell it. Come on, man. I call her right now. She'll go by the bank. She'll bring that money over here. You just leave the car here. I'll give you a ride back to your truck. I said, well, I tell you what. Here's why. I tell you, Tyler, that car got a lot of problems. Got a lot of stuff's got to be going through on it. But I'll sell it to you for 4 grand. But here's, I tell you what, you got your lift here. You got it here at your shop. You take the afternoon. I'll leave the car. I'll catch a ride back over to the record company, get back in my truck and go to work. And I'll leave the car here with you all afternoon. You can check it out real good and drive it around, make sure it's what you want. If you want to do it, call your old lady, get her bring it 4 grand. I'll come over here when you come closing time and we'll make a deal. But I leave it. I figure he's going to get it up on that lift. He's going to see that back fender. I know there's got to be damage underneath that car. He's going to start screwing around, seeing some of the wiring that's all jacked up. But I'm tired of arguing. You figure it out for yourself, big boy. He's one of these people you couldn't tell nothing. He's the smartest guy in the room all the time. I said, well, yeah, you go on. You figure it out for yourself, buddy. I went and ran calls the rest of the day. And sure enough, stopped by Tyler's shop right around closing time. They just shut the shop down. Old Tyler come out there grinning like a pig. I said, what is it, Bubba? He said, "Man," he said, "I might have to redo some of them electrical harnesses up in the engine department." I said, "Yeah." I told you he's got some problems. He said, "I think that car's had water in it." I said, "I told you it's been flooded. It's car got some problems." He said, "I still gotta have it." I said, "All right, bud." I said, "Well, I told you I'd sell it to you if you checked it out and decided you really wanted it." He said, "Yep. I done checked it out good. Me and my guys went all through it." Well, y'all didn't go through it too damn good if y'all ain't seen that wrinkled up back fender yet. He said, "But I do got to do this XK." He said, "Man, would you take $3,800 for it?" I said, "Yeah, Bubba, I'll take $3,800 for it." Well, he done called his old lady. She had already come by with the money. He had it ready to go. He's just trying to get a little. I was like, "Whatever, bro. You just don't even know." Yeah, give me that $3,800. I took that $3,800. Me and my gal, we went on about our life that night, went out and partied, laughed it up, made a little money on the deal. Not much, about $1,700 all said and done after I got done paying a mirror and paying for the exhaust system and all that. But $1,700, and I got to drive a fun little 454 Monte Carlo. Which, that's a great engine swap for that car. If you have one, that's what you should. That was fun. That was a fun car to drive, boy. I run that thing up and down 59 a couple nights. I didn't get too much in the high end because, like I said, it pulled a little bit. But, boy, it was fun to drift around on the back streets. You could whip that thing around like it wasn't nothing, but that was a fun car to drive. No big deal. Sold it to Tyler. Man, it ain't 2 weeks later, I see old Square up at work one day. He said, "Young blood, I can't believe you. I can't believe you sold Tyler that car for that kind of money." I said, "Man, he had to have it." I said, "I told him he had all kind of problems and stuff. And I told him I'd had a mirror working on it. He said he had to have that car." Square said, "I wouldn't worry none about it. He's telling everybody he got you good. He's telling everybody it's a special edition. It's worth about 12 grand. And boy, you never even saw him coming. He got you so good." I said, "Square, ain't no special edition. It's just a car. Somebody swapped a 454 in." He said, "Man, you can't tell Tyler that." I said, "He's telling anybody, listen, he put it on you." And I will honestly tell you, I've never screwed somebody worse on a car deal. But he's my happiest customer ever. That dude bragged for months about how he got over on me on that car. And I know at some point they found that body damage that they overlooked when they had the car all afternoon. But probably his pride got in the way of telling anybody about that part then. Or he might, you know, Tyler might still have that car and still be telling people it's a special edition. But it's not. They didn't make a special edition 1986 Malibu SS with a 454 in it. That car never existed. That was a turbo coupe, Monte Carlo. Let's say Monte Carlo Malibu. I'm bad about switching it. It was a turbo coupe Monte Carlo, base turbo coupe. Somebody put a 454 in now. Probably early 70s Monte Carlo. Don't buy a car at night, Bubba. God, Tyler talks so much shit about me. "Oh, boy, you got to know your stuff. You're going to be in the car business. You done got out here playing with the grown-ups, son. You wasn't ready." Oh, he's proud. I would still take customers to him. I mean, for months after that. And this dude, every time he saw, he couldn't wait to come over there and brag about how great that car was, what a great deal, and how I just didn't know what I had. Old diamond in the rough. Let's wrap it up right there. Let's go do some testimonials, if you will. Testimonials are comments from last week. What episode did we do last week, ladies and gentlemen? What did we do? I forgot what we was talking about. But I do got my comments right here loaded up. Oh, man, I actually enjoyed last week. That was my Uncle Stanley's S10. Okay. Yeah, last week was 1984 S10, Chevrolet S10. A lot of stories about my Uncle Stanley. Here we go. At Sergeant Frog 6575. "This has become my favorite podcast to listen to while I'm fishing. The vibe is perfect." Man, that's kind of cool. I don't usually like to listen to nothing while I'm fishing. But I guess if you're going to listen to something, a podcast would be. I never thought about that. I listen to podcasts a lot when I'm driving, but I bet that would be kind of cool when you're out there just fishing. So if you're fishing today, Sergeant Frog, I hope you catch all the big ones you're looking for. Or unless you're like me and you just want the eating size. And in that case, I hope you get all the eating size you can fit in your cooler in the game board and don't know about, Bubba. It's between you and me. At Texasippian. Crazy timing of this specific episode. My best friend from elementary and all the way through high school drove a love pickup, then he got an S10 our senior year. He passed away this past Friday completely unexpectedly. We had lost touch over the years, but he was as good as they get. Man, I hate to hear that, Bubba. Those are I've lost a couple friends over the years I grew up with. Ones I wasn't necessarily that close to anymore, but it's still, man, it's often a lot of times it's a reminder of our own mortality too. And I'm glad you enjoyed the episode. Sorry for the loss of your buddy. Oh, our buddy Gene at Gene Bond. Thanks for another great one, JW. It's funny or not how times change and what was normal is now evil. Back when I was a kid, the words we used to describe the folks who were not mainstream now sound downright mean and hateful. But back then, it was the best we could do, or at least it seemed that way. Having a son with challenges certainly changes your perspective. Also, having a daughter who teaches those with challenges makes me proud. Sure, I still slip from time to time where my lips get ahead of my brain, just like some idiot in traffic does something stupid. Your mouth sometimes barks out a word you may not admit, but may actually fit the moment. I keep trying to get better, but we do the best we can. But that's about all anybody can do. Language is constantly evolving. We all know the difference between somebody who says something every once in a while, an accident, and doesn't really mean anything hateful by it. It's just a word they were raised with or grew up with. Not making excuses for it. I'm just saying we know the difference between that and somebody who's an outright hateful person and somebody who's saying something to be hateful. And luckily, I don't encounter a lot of them people anymore. To be honest with you, I've got friends that are older and they come from a different time. They say things that may be a little colorful, little uncool at times, but I know they're not trying to be outwardly hateful to anybody. I've heard people use like that word I was talking about last week, and I've heard people use that word colloquial. I know they don't mean they're not saying anything ugly about children or whatever, you know. I know that's not what they're doing. But it is, we all have different things that catch our ear, and that's one of those that catches mine for sure. Like I said, but I'm like you, Bubba. I'm learning every day. I'm still just trying to do the best I can do. I ain't trying to preach to nobody, that's for damn sure. I'm just trying to make sure everybody knows who I am. All righty. No big lesson this week. Don't buy a car at night. I tell you, that's one of my biggest rules. Every time I've done it, it's that time it didn't get me, but it could have. I thought it did. Luckily, old Tyler came through and saved me on my lost investment. Bought that special edition Monte Carlo with a 454. I will tell you, if I ever get the opportunity to buy a G-body with a 454 in it again, I probably will buy it because, boy, that bugger sure was a lot of fun to drive. If it hadn't been for that, the back end being so jacked, I probably would have kept it. Now, maybe not. I was going through a lot of stuff back then, but that would be a fun car to play with now. That'd be a fun car to run up and down the road when you could afford to put some gasoline in it. And 454s drank that gasoline. Thought my mic turned off for a minute. I got worried. Once again, thank you guys for sharing your Sunday with me. I really, those of you following the weight loss efforts, it's dropping like butter, man. I'm down 296 this week. So I'm just melting away and putting the work in. Feeling good. Figured out my digestive issues. Get that under control. I'm getting really excited about these Colorado shows. Like I said, if you're interested in sponsorship, reach out to us, jwlcomedy@gmail.com. Thank you guys for the support. Y'all, there's some of y'all that have been watching this from the very beginning. I know who you are, a lot of you. Some of you have been coming to the chat since the very beginning. Some of you have been a part of this thing since the very beginning, before I even knew what it was. And I signed a book deal today. I signed it. We have a contract, publishing contract. It's a real thing. Something I didn't think was going to be a direction my life took. Also, there's three people out there that I know occasionally watch this podcast, and I know like to poke their head in on what I'm doing. Three of my comedy brethren. And I know what y'all said when you heard about the book deal stuff. I know what you said. You think you said it to somebody you could trust, but you didn't. And I know what you said. And I ain't even mad at you. You know what? God bless you. I'm too happy to be irritated by that. And I hope that when it's your time to shine, everybody gives you your flowers. I mean that for y'all too. I'm always rooting for you. And I want to see y'all get your flowers when it's your turn to shine. Room at the table for everybody. Little special nod. Like I said, check out that Earnhardt documentary if you haven't seen it. St. Dale, man. Might have been why I thought about that Monte Carlo after watching that documentary. I bet it was. Hope you guys are getting around the obstacles in your week. Thank you for being here. And, be safety. I'll see you guys next week. Remember, I'm JW and I love you.